So I guess we can just start the show with talking about probably the most interesting thing of the whole week, which in my opinion is the Galaxy Z Flip, which was announced this week, but it's been rumored
ages. It was rumored since the Galaxy Fold, honestly.
Yeah, and it seems like it should have launched last year too, based on this the processor, right? Because it's last year's flagship processor.
A55.
So it seems like A55
Plus, Dennis.
Right. So it seems like it probably should have been like last year's Samsung foldable, I guess, push was originally maybe intended to be kind of a 1-2 punch with the Fold coming out and then the Flip later in the year. But it looks like, you know, that didn't happen probably because of, just all the kind of botched launch issues and everything that happened with the Fold, with them basically falling apart in reviewers' hands, which was a very bad look for an $1,800 phone. But yeah, finally launched this week and we got a chance to check it out at Unpacked 2020. And that was an experience. Actually, after the event started with the Z Flip, and the first 20-25 minutes was just talking about the Z Flip. And after the event ended, I went straight to the Z Flip. It was kind of comical, actually, in the hands-on area. Like, it was like they had three major sections with all S20 phones, and they had one major section that was the Z Flip, basically, and it was very lopsided in terms of traffic. The S20s were very, you know how these hands-on areas are. Sometimes it's easy to get your hands on the devices and it's not as crowded and you can get good footage. And other times it's kind of like people are just like waiting in line. And yeah, this week the Z Flip was that. There was definitely not enough Z Flips out for people to see, I don't think.
So I think a good analogy of that is probably when the first iPhones and iPads came out, but you didn't have an Apple store to go to, so you just went to a Best Buy, but there was only one of each. There was only one iPad for you to see, so people just waited in line.
Yeah, that was basically what was happening at Unpacked. And yeah, so it's a foldable phone, and it is probably the best, I guess, long story short, it's the best of the foldables that have been tried so far. I mean, I'm curious, what's your perception of it as someone who, I mean, I've got, you know, a laundry list of things that I can talk about. What's your perception of it as someone who didn't get to see it in person yet and is just kind of witnessing it happen?
I kind of want one, to be honest. And from the outside, I do not truly get the concept of foldable phones in terms of that it's still going to be thick. You're stacking two phones. Basically, you're stacking two phones on top of another and shoving it in your pocket. So from that point of view, I don't truly get the appeal. My personal appeal from it is low. And on the other hand, in terms of pure design, I think the Razr looks like a better device. It's less of a, with the Galaxy Z Flip, it does look like it's just a folded phone. Today's modern smartphone folded in half. But at least the Motorola Razr had these design stylings. It had a chin. It was taking advantage of an iconic shape. So in terms of like from a few months ago going into this new category, I was biased towards the Razr. I was in favor of the Razr, but of course the Razr stuff happened in terms of the Razr in general. And going into Samsung and reading everybody's perspectives, including yours, it really does seem that there's a big turnaround in terms of what Samsung was able to achieve on the hardware front between the Galaxy Fold and the Z Flip, which if these phones were supposed to launch at the same time. One must ask, how is Samsung able to do a complete 180 in such short a time span from a plastic screen to a glass screen? It's quite a comeback.
Yeah, and I wrote a little bit about it in this piece. Basically, I tried to summarize my thoughts on foldables as a category, and then kind of paint a little bit of a picture of how I think the flip affects that story. How do you feel about kind of my initial take, which is basically like we're kind of in this middle ground right now, not knowing whether this is going to be a significant innovation that kind of makes its way through, you know, the smartphone space as a whole, which has to include Apple. Or do you think that it's kind of, I mean, do you compare it more to some of the things that we've seen on the Android side that have been kind of temporary innovations that maybe some people found very useful? There have been so many things that have been very appealing to very small subsets of the market, but for the most part have not hit the mainstream. You know, we're never going to see an iPhone with a physical keyboard, or we're probably never going to see an iPhone with a physical stylus inside of it. Whereas, you know, that doesn't mean those ideas are invalid. It just means that they're not important enough to matter on a bigger scale. Do you agree that we're kind of like we're still a little bit stuck in the middle and not really knowing which way phones are going to go?
No, absolutely. Like it's more than a stylistic thing. Like remember when everybody started curving their phone, the edges of their phone, That was a purely stylistic choice, which I don't see too much functionality from.
Quite the opposite, in my opinion. It seems to have Samsung's whole just experiment with the kind of waterfall, I guess, display kind of basically curved edges. Like that just fell apart because now we'll talk about this in a minute. But the S20 is almost back to square one on that. It barely has any kind of edge at all.
So there is the use of getting more screen real estate, but I don't think the actual screen you're getting with a flip phone is big enough to offer a meaningfully different experience than using a large phone today. It's what you get two squares for apps, basically, is what you're seeing.
Are you talking about for the flip?
For the flip phone, yeah. If we're talking about the Surface Duo, I have drastically different thoughts. But yes, for the flip, it's just squares. And I don't think the flip phones, in terms of like with foldables, you can make a total productivity use case. But I don't think flip phones get that benefit. This form factor is just too small to do anything meaningful. You get to see some more tweets as you're scrolling. You get to see more messages and conversation. Sure, that's something. So I don't think there's a productivity angle for flip phones. But at the same time, I think the more interesting use case is for people who do have constrained pockets. So we're talking about women's clothing here. Women's jeans who have tiny or non-existent pockets, and being able to compact what you're putting in your pocket by half is it could be meaningful, but at the same time, like I said at the top, it's a bit thick. You're just putting thicker things. You're sliding in two smartphones in your pocket, and I don't know if growing in the Z direction is meaningful, is such a good trade-off.
I think it is, but I agree with you kind of going back to your point that the utility argument for the flip factor, form factor, is a lot harder to find. than with the Galaxy Fold or the Surface Duo. There's basically two categories of these devices right now, right? Like there's the flip phone form factor, which is what, as of now, we just have the Razer and the Z Flip. And then there's the kind of, you can kind of see this vision of a phone that can be both a phone and a tablet at the same time, which is kind of what the Fold is, but it doesn't quite accomplish it because the phone aspect is kind of halfway there, in my opinion. The tablet is all the way there, but the phone is kind of, you know, not the greatest experience. And so I don't know. I just think that's easy, I think, to see a tangible, you know, utility to. Whereas the flip phone, I think the argument, like you're saying, boils down to the practicality of what kind of pockets it fits inside of. And honestly, my take on that, I think, just as an anecdote, I was wearing my Levi's Jacquard jacket at the event on Tuesday, and it has front pockets, right? Like chest pockets, and that they button down, right? And these pockets would not be able to hold any of my standard phones. Like they physically wouldn't be able to hold them because they have a flap that buttons down, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no way I could put any of my current smartphones in either of those pockets. And it was a cool experience being able to put the Z Flip in that pocket and button it down. And not that that...
I would not button it down. That seems risky.
I mean, not that... Yeah, right. The pressure with these
hinges.
The hinges and the, you know, just how fragile the displays are in general. But yeah, I was able to just slip it in and button it down. And that was, you know, I mean, I don't think that for me, that doesn't matter because I have perfectly, you know, big enough jean pockets for all my phones. Like even the big, even the biggest phones, you know, even the S20 Ultra 5G, it fits probably fine in one of my pockets. It's bulky, but it's not, you know, out of the question. For some people, it's out of the question. I mean, a lot of women and men, but especially women, wear pants that don't have any pockets at all on some days, on some occasions, for different reasons, whether you're going to work out or whatever. And, you know, it's like, I think, you know, having the phone that is twice as thick in the Z direction, but half as long is actually a practical benefit. And just depending on your life, right? Like but that's the kind of, going back to what I'm saying, is this the kind of thing that is going to appeal? Is it like a BlackBerry Key 2 physical keyboard where it appeals to 1% or less of the smartphone market? Or are these flippable form factors going to turn out to be practical enough that they kind of prove to be, I guess, more ubiquitous in terms of their utility? I think I can say after this week that I'm pretty confident that this is not going to be like a natural progression where every single smartphone is going to become a flip phone. I think that was kind of a given from the beginning, but I think that even especially after this week, I can say that pretty confidently. On the other hand, the Z Flip proves out the idea in a way that hasn't been done yet. I don't think.
It's a true first.
It's the first one that feels finished to me. Like whatever degree to which the idea has merit, that's not what I'm talking about. The actual execution is finally there in this device for the first time. And what I mean by that, I guess I can go into that just a little bit. I wrote about this in my piece. The Galaxy Z Flip really does feel like sturdy. It doesn't feel like it's going to fall apart. I was able to, you know, kind of, you know, how this just a satisfying, you know, old flip phone, you could just like flick it open with one hand and kind of just fling it a little bit to open it up.
And I was too young for that, so I wouldn't know.
Okay, well, for those of the 16 people watching right now that do know what I'm talking about, you can do that with the Z Flip. Like it satisfyingly flings open and to answer a phone call, you know, and likewise to flip it close. And you don't get, you know, with the Moto Razer 2020, the build quality is just not there. You see a gap between the display and the hinge, and it's like, creaks when you open it and close it. Just check out Dieter Bohn's video review if you haven't of that. It's pretty
you hear the plastic.
Ruthless.
You hear the plastic.
It's pretty bad. And it was hilarious seeing Motorola's statement saying that the noises are normal and do not affect the quality of the product. And it's like, no, that the whole point is that because it's creaking, that is reflective of the quality of the product.
I do want to take it two places. You said it's a sturdy feeling technology, hardware device. It's not waterproof. It's not IP rated. Of course it wouldn't be. How would you use this phone? Would you baby this phone? Because, okay, assuming cost isn't a question, could you use this phone in a regular manner?
Yeah, I didn't feel that way about the Fold. The Fold felt fragile. It felt like a piece of jewelry, and especially at its price point of over almost $2,000, it felt like you had to baby it. But there's two things here. I think, you know, right. There's no water resistance, but hard to describe kind of, the sense that you get, the confidence, the build quality kind of inspires confidence in a way. And I think that has to do with a couple things. The hinge is just really good in comparison to the Galaxy Fold. And the other thing is, I think the glass display really, even though it's very, very thin, flexible glass, it's like almost not glass. It's very close to not being glass. It adds just a degree of confidence that is hard to describe with words. And really what I guess the best way I could try to describe it is on the Galaxy Fold, for example, if it's open and you're holding it with one hand, it's impossible to just squeeze the device to close it, right? You have to actually put pressure in the middle on the crease. You have to put pressure in the middle to close it. You have to. I've tried many times to hold it. It opens up and it kind of clicks open and you can't close it with one hand. You have to put pressure in the middle. And that gives you a little bit of anxiety on the Galaxy Fold. Anyone that's used one will tell you is that, you know, since the display is plastic and thin, it feels like you're literally pressing on the LED panel. And it's a very foreign feeling to those of us that are used to using glass smartphones. We're not used to any kind of feeling that feels like we're actually, you know, when you tap on a glass smartphone, it's a hard surface. When you press in the middle on the crease on the Galaxy Fold, it feels like your finger might go through it. It feels like you might actually, if you have a soft display, you know, monitor, and you press on it, you get a little bit of a sense that your finger's kind of going in, and if you push too hard, you might actually be able to break some of the pixels. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's anxiety inducing by itself.
That's the feeling that you get when you press on the inside of the Galaxy Fold. And it's especially anxiety inducing because it's an $1,800 device. Because if you push too hard and you kill some of those pixels, you're out of luck. I didn't get that feeling nearly as much on the Galaxy Z Flip. And that's kind of one of the differentiators here. It's a very subtle thing, but I felt like I could press, I guess on the Galaxy Z Flip, to close it with one hand, you have to do a similar maneuver where you put your thumb kind of right in the crease and then kind of flick it closed with one hand. You can do that on the Z Flip without feeling that anxiety, because I think the glass display gives you just enough resistance to where it doesn't feel like you're pushing your thumb through the screen.
Yeah, so, I would use two hands to close that. That is a frightening thought.
Yeah, sure. And I thought I would have to too, but with the Z Flip, I feel confident enough not to feel that way, just barely.
Got it. So
that's kind of how I would describe using it normally.
Okay, and the other thing I want to ask you, as somebody who's used this, does it feel futuristic?
I mean, it feels new. I don't know if futuristic is the right word. You know, it's an unusual experience because we've had very little, you know, actual hands-on time with LED displays that can fold and actually are in the form factor of something that we can actually use. So it's interesting mm-hmm. and new in that sense. But it's not, it doesn't feel, I wouldn't say futuristic is the right word.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like the feeling you might get if you put on Google Glass and you kind of think like, oh, this might be a little bit of a sense of what a future kind of AR, like uh-huh. the Google Glass is very, you know, now it's 7 years old. And so it's very dated now in a sense, but even still, if you put one on, you still get a sense of futurism, I think, with uh-huh. any AR heads up display product. I didn't feel that way with this, but you know, it's all personal. And
okay. Yeah. So another question. So it's basically a square, right? When it's closed down, you're holding a square. Yeah. Many people call it a Game Boy Advance SP. So how does it feel in the hand when you're like moving around with it in the compact, when you have it in the palm of your hand, just, I don't know, you're moving around with it. Is that an uncomfortable shape, a perfect square? And how is the thickness when it was?
I don't know. I think we might be getting a little bit too specific on describing the nuances of these things, but no, I don't think, I mean, it feels foreign because it's not the normal rectangular glass device that we're all so used to holding in our hands for several hours in a day. But I wouldn't say it's uncomfortable. It's just different. And it's something that we're not used to. I think that's all I really have to say about that. So, I mean, that's the first thing, is kind of just the general feel. I guess another thing we can probably talk about too is the external display on this one. It feels like the Galaxy Fold and the Z Flip are both compromises in terms of the secondary utility of the external display. Mm-hmm. On the Fold, it feels like it's really close to being it's really close to being a fully functional phone on the outside display and, you know, on the inside, but it's just those huge top and bottom bezels kind of are a little bit jarring, I think. But it's still functional. On the Z Flip, it is, I think, almost pointless. It's very close to being pointless. I guess having the time is nice. Yes,
it is very much so.
And yeah, I mean, that's really the only thing, being able to see the time on the outside without having to flip open the phone. That's really all. It's like very similar to the very basic displays you would have on the front of old classic flip phones. they're not really functional for anything except just displaying the time. And that's kind of what the Z Flip feels like, where it's like, I think in the next, you know, 3 years, we'll have a Z Flip form factor that has a second display that takes up the entire, you know, body of that external hardware. And it might actually be useful for doing quick things. And likewise on the Fold, that's what I'm excited for. I'm excited for the eventual form factor of the Fold being a full screen display on the outside with the tablet size display on the inside. For two reasons, and this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I actually am a little bit fond of the form factor of the Essential Gem phone that got shown off. Like,
yes, likewise.
I'm for some reason, I'm just fond of that kind of candy bar type style. And if we did have a device like the Galaxy Fold, you know, with a full screened external display, then that would be the same. It would be the same form factor. So that's really cool to me. But on the Z Flip, it's the notifications are worthless, and the selfie thing is a gimmick and pointless. Yeah. I don't really see that being used by anyone. So yeah, I mean, I guess rounding out this topic, I think my take on it is, will these foldables like actually be, I don't know, the future? I don't think the Z Flip is really signaling that this is a natural progression, but it's also not really a regression. It's kind of just, I mentioned this in my piece, it's kind of like, it feels to me like a be together, not the same kind of thing, where it's just a quirky Android phone. It's the best of the quirky Android foldable phones yet, but it's still just a quirky Android phone that the vast majority of people probably won't be inclined to care about. But I guess on it, from a build quality standpoint, it's proving out that this kind of idea is not entirely pointless, and it might be worth pursuing. And in the next few years, we might have something that's actually functional and practical and actually brings some utility to people. So that's kind of my overall take. I was, before this week, very skeptical of the form factor in general, and skeptical that the trade-offs of a foldable in general could ever be worth it. I think the fold-offs, including the fragility, you know, not being able to use glass, true glass, the crease, it doesn't seem like the crease is going to be engineered out very soon. It seems like that's kind of an inevitability for the time being, at least for the next few generations, I would guess. And just the form factor also is, like the current slab smartphone that we've gotten used to has been so over-engineered and so optimized that we've been able to cram huge batteries into a very tiny space with all of the top-notch specs and hardware. And it's like, that's just not possible with the foldable form factor yet, because we haven't figured out how to engineer all of that in there without compromising. Probably for, you know, physical, like actual physical limitations. Yeah. So we're still a ways away, but I'm less cynical about the form factor than I was before. And I would also say, I think after seeing this, whether it's a foldable iPad or something, I think that we're going to see Apple take this on in one way or another. They're definitely going to do it after the technology reaches a point of maturity where they can put out a product that has fewer blatant compromises. Like, I doubt Apple will ever put out something that has a crease or something that you can feel in the middle of the display. I don't think that will ever happen. But I do feel more confident after this week that Apple is actually going to take on this form factor, whether that be 2 years or 5 years. I think it's more a matter of when. So, yeah, that's the Z Flip.
Yeah, it's something new, and I guess there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, if you have a podcast talking about Google or Android, something to talk about. let's talk about that real quick. The S20 is more exciting to me for one specific reason. Can you guess? Can you guess why I care about the S20?
No, I can't. Can you guess?
Come on. Why would I?
Yeah, that 120 hertz refresh.
Yes, thank you. Yes, yeah. I don't care about the S20 at all, but I care about these 120 hertz displays. I almost said gigahertz. These 120 hertz displays are amazing. And I know the S20 is locked at 1080p on them. I don't care. They look great and they feel great to use. And it's a complete game changer, in my opinion. Even versus 90 hertz. It just feels like, I don't know. Have you used a 120 hertz display on an iPad Pro or, you know, any of these other Android phones?
It feels too real.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the reality, the paper-like feeling I think it's a game changer for phones. It really, I think it completely changes the way we use our devices. For some reason, it's just like, from a very hard to describe UX perspective, it just feels so satisfying. It's like the most satisfying thing to me about phones, besides, I guess, a really good kind of thumpy vibration motor, which no Android has. No Android phone has. Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of thing to me, where it's like, you don't know that it matters until after you've switched. You know, if you've used an iPhone for a while and you get used to the Taptic engine, switching back to an Android phone makes all of the vibration motors feel awful. And I think it's the same thing with these displays. If you use a 120 hertz display for a few months and then you switch back, or you switch to your phone that doesn't have one, it's jarring, I think.
So, okay, so it's user experience, you said. It makes it
feel it's hard. It's a hard thing to
explain. Yeah, I totally see that, but it's things are moving faster, vaguely closer to reality. It's like, it's, I don't know how much people appreciate that. It's a nice thing. It's a nice, bordering superfluous thing. So that's your excitement there.
I tend to get excited about the superfluous things. So.
Absolutely. Don't we all? So there are three of them. That's a lot to keep in people's minds. That's a lot to juggle from Samsung.
Yeah. It's two of them. Really, it's two of them. But yeah, the Ultra one is overkill. I don't really see. I mean, so the cameras have been the focal point of these phones. And definitely feels like a symptom of Samsung feeling like they have something to prove, because Google has pulled ahead of them in camera performance for the last few years, arguably. If you trust Marquez's blind camera tests, then no one has pulled ahead of anything. But yeah, I think objectively speaking, Pixels have been pumping out the best photos for Android phones for the last few years. And I think Samsung had to make this event all about cameras, because they feel like they have something to prove. I don't know if they've proven it. I also feel like this might be a stretch, but I feel like that might be part of the 20 branding too. They really pushed, like, all the signs in the venue all said 2020. And so I think the 20 branding was, one, that it's 2020, the year 2020.
Yeah.
Two, 120 hertz displays and kind of the visual connotation about that. And then most importantly, the cameras, the 2020 vision camera, you know, whatever. I think that those three things together were why Samsung went with the S20 and not the S11.
Yeah.
So yeah, cameras were a big deal. On the Ultra, you get this 108 megapixel sensor.
Insane.
It's a little bit much, in my opinion. Yes. Unless you are trying to replace your professional photography with a smartphone. I mean, that's really, and unless you know what you're doing, right? Because most people, what they care about is, with any smartphone camera, is just capturing a good looking shot in the moment that they need to capture a good looking shot. And for most people, I don't think that having an 18 megapixel camera versus 108 megapixel camera is going to matter. I think the computational photography advances that Google's made outweigh the raw data.
That's been the
108 megapixel camera on the S20 is going to capture. So if you know how to use it, then it's going to be for you. But I don't think that the Ultra, I don't think that any consumer should buy the Ultra because they think that the Ultra is going to magically capture better photos.
Yeah, I am curious who the Ultra is for. If there is are people going to get upsell to the Ultra? They people that want the best, or the market for the Ultra is fascinating, and whether how seriously Samsung wants to push it. I guess reasonably, Samsung sees the S20, of course, as the primary seller, but this distinguishing an Ultra line is an interesting fragmentation, really.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of the same thing as, I don't know where that idea was going.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's certain buyer. I mean, really, if you think about it, so you know, I think about with the iPhone, for example, the iPhone 11 is 90% of what the iPhone 11 Pro is, right? And the iPhone 11 Pro, if you want to, so like, for instance, the iPhone 11, 128 gigs is, I think, $749. And then the iPhone 11 Pro, 64. No, you have to go 256. So if you bump up after 64 to 256 iPhone 11 Pro, you're up to $1,249. So $749 versus $1,249 for what I would argue is a 10% benefit. So you're almost doubling. Not quite, but you're getting close to doubling the price for what I think is probably like a 10% benefit in terms of feature set and additional storage size. And I think that's kind of a similar thing that Samsung is going for, is that there's a certain customer that's always going to purchase the most expensive phone regardless. Or if there's multiple models, they're going to pick to purchase the most expensive model because they're, you know, a lot of people, it's easy to justify because our phones have become the most important device in our lives. And if we only buy one every 3 years, which is what it is average now, I think in 2020, I think the latest data is showing people upgrade every 3 years now. I think it's easy to justify a $1,200, $1,400 phone, especially if you're on a monthly payment plan where it's only $40 a month. And it's like, really, all these people, what they're seeing on the, you know, tag at a smartphone or at a carrier store, they're seeing a $35 monthly price versus a $45 monthly price or a $55 monthly price. And it doesn't look as much as it is. So, yeah. So I'm not surprised by the Ultra. And I think that we'll see it get even more egregious in the coming years.
So, to touch on the other aspects of the event, what was the atmosphere? What was the atmosphere? Was it exciting? Was Samsung really trying to push a message, or was it just an event?
I mean, really, the messages were flip phones are the future, and we've caught up with everyone on cameras. Those are really the two primary messages. And I think we've reached a point where people, I mean, I could audibly hear people yawning around me during the entire last hour of the event, or the last 30 minutes of the event, when they were just rambling about the Galaxy S20 forever. Like, it was like you could feel in the room, I think, just kind of like a sense of like, this is the same thing every year, you know, and it kind of is, you know. The Samsung S20 is, Galaxy S20 is, it's just a marginal upgrade over year, and it's, I think people have generally gotten tired of it. And that's why, even though the Samsung Galaxy S20 is so much more technically impressive, especially the Ultra, in the hands-on area, everyone was attracted to the little flippy boy. So, I don't know. I think that was kind of my feeling. It seems like people have gotten so bored with phones that even the slightest hint of something different and unique and interesting is what gets all the attention now.
Indeed.
Oh yeah. That was all on that front. Other things that Samsung talked about. So Hiroshi Lockheimer showed up, and that was cool. He basically talked about how Google is supporting Samsung in terms of, I think, what were his three tent poles? I think he talked about accessibility with live caption.
5G.
Yeah, 5G, and then foldables, right? Were those his three?
Oh, yeah. Optimizing for foldables.
Yeah, so he was basically coming out and saying, we're supporting Samsung in all these things. And they better be, because Samsung's their only OEM now for the US market. The other thing that they did was they integrated, they're working closely, Samsung and Google are working closely together to optimize Duo for the Galaxy S20. Yeah. And the S20 is the first smartphone, Android phone, to do 1080p video calls over Duo. So that's interesting. The S10 got a price cut, and the Galaxy Buds Plus were announced, which are just marginally better version of the Galaxy Buds. Yeah. They're pretty cheap, $149. They come in cheaper than the standard AirPods, actually.
The case is too big and not very pocketable.
I wouldn't know. I haven't opened mine yet.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that was pretty much all there was. No, there was no Galaxy Home Mini. It seems like that's a whole conversation.
They are giving them out in South Korea for whatever, for some reason. That's pre-ordered gifts, S20. My guess would be that they've mostly optimized Bixby for the South Korea, for Korean. So I think that's why they're launching
the Korean language.
Yeah, for the Korean language.
Yeah. And obviously Samsung has a much closer ecosystem following in that market than they do here. It makes sense. You know, the loyalty to the brand is strong enough that they could probably launch just about any technology product and people would probably buy it.
I'll be interested in this.
But yeah, I think in the US, not launching the Galaxy Home Mini and also...
It's the absolute right call for them.
Yeah, and just not launching smart speakers at all is reflective of, honestly, it's a self-awareness that I'm surprised they have, frankly. Mm-hmm. A self-awareness that Amazon and Google have just taken the market. I don't see any other player. In fact, I think Sonos, which is really the third speaker player as of right now.
Yeah.
Even more so than Apple with the HomePod. Sonos, I think, is going to be acquired in the next 12 months. I think Sonos will probably be picked up by Apple.
Yeah, it's
because they can't keep fighting.
No, the brand is very good. That's a powerful thing they have. And if we're going to talk about smart speakers, for people who just want like premium audio quality, so there's something there.
Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much rounds it out on Samsung stuff. There's a few other things that are interesting that happened this week that I guess we can talk about, and then we'll take questions from anyone who's watching. So yes. Feel free to start dropping any questions that you have right now on anything related to Samsung this week. Or any other Android ecosystem goings on that might be interesting to you. We'll be try to get to those here in a minute at the end of the show.
So the gem.
What?
The gem.
I didn't know if we wanted to give that any airtime.
You already mentioned it earlier, the form factor.
Sure, yeah. I've already committed the cardinal sin. The gem is dead. As is essential.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Maybe the gem's not dead. That would actually be the best possible ending for that. If the gem got picked up by a different company that had nothing to do with
it. Yeah, and the employees working on it. So I think there was a good going theory that the employees at Essential wanted like their work for the past few years to be out there. And this as a last hurrah of sorts. That they were trying something bold. It's new. I'm pretty sure we know how well it would do in the market, but it's new. It's different. It's generally different on the scale of a foldable phone, I would say, honestly. But yeah. Not viable for a number of reasons, both technologically and culturally, let's say.
Yeah, the gem feels a little bit like it kind of feels like a novelty.
Yeah.
It feels like what's the phone called? Is it called like the simple phone or something like that? Which it's not exactly that because it would still have some level of app access. But, you know, it's kind of one of those, it kind of feels like a digital well-being phone to me. It's kind of like a whole category of niche smartphones that are just kind of like,
a full Spotify client, Instagram client,
right?
Just something. But yeah,
it's like you still get the full experience, but it's on a small enough screen that it's probably not easy to get sucked into.
Yeah, can you imagine reading the web on that? Is there even a browser on that?
Like email? I don't think that responsive websites have been designed
to be that narrow.
But
I mean, the other direction, though. I mean,
if you're reading, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous either way, right?
Yeah,
it's probably unreadable either way, because if you turn it horizontal, you only get like 3 lines of text.
Yeah, why not?
And if you turn it vertical, you've got like 40 lines of text, but they're all like 2 words wide.
It does. It wouldn't have survived in any market, I don't think.
Yeah, so that's that. Also this week MWC got canceled, so rip MWC. It's been interesting seeing the conversation around this. Some people who are probably closer to what I would call kind of informed industry insiders are suggesting that this might be the last MWC, or this might be the end. It might be the end of MWC forever, kind of thing. Maybe in Barcelona, but I've even read some takes that this might be the end.
Yeah,
because the organization may not be able to sustain the financial hit, and also because it doesn't exactly inspire confidence for future attendees.
No, but at the fundamental level, the iterate, you can't do a big yearly production about iterative updates. There's only so many more players that can enter the market, even upstarts. I forgot which analyst on Twitter said this, but it was something along the lines of, once the iPhone generation came, it was a totally different ballgame. It's mostly been the same for the past few years. And yes, there's the business angles of a large conference, but most companies today, they want to own the entire experience. People care about this stuff, and they want to just have a direct relationship with consumers and customers in terms of the announcing things angle. So it took them the companies for headspace during a week when you could do it beforehand, like Samsung.
Yeah. So
yeah,
MWC is going to not be a topic of conversation for us on the show in the next couple weeks. Unfortunately, I mean that's really for us the big loss is that we weren't really going to be attending in very much capacity in the first place, but we're not going to have any phones to talk about. The GSMA was kind of in between a rock and a hard place, right? Because they couldn't just cancel without kind of getting government declaration of emergency. That's the only way they could get their insurers to pay out. On the other hand,
insurance runs the world, doesn't it?
On the other hand, all of their biggest exhibitors, even members of the GSMA itself, all
carriers.
So yeah, it's pretty unfortunate
indeed.
I think we'll leave the show there for the week. It doesn't look like anyone has many significant questions, and quite frankly, I don't blame them. It was a pretty slow week, and I think if there's any questions, they probably would have been Galaxy Z Flip related, and I think we exhaustively covered it for half an hour. So, I think we're going to call it there. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week on YouTube. We record this podcast on Thursdays lately, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can even listen on our site over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. Thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.